Lecture 42. Greece Conquered. The End of Greek Autonomy.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello again. In the first part of this lecture, we're going to discuss Philip's dealings with the Greek states from 346 to 338, during which time Demosthenes worked tirelessly to discredit Philip as a despot and to provoke further warfare between Athens and Macedonia. Demosthenes was successful. And in the second part of the lecture, we'll discuss the Battle of Chaeronea in 338. This was fought between Philip and a coalition of Greek states put together by Demosthenes. It was one of Greece's decisive battles because Philip's victory meant that Greece fell under the hegemony of Macedonia and Greek autonomy came to an end. The Peace of Philocrates was doomed to fail. In this regard, it's not much different from, say, the 30 Years' Peace that ended the First Peloponnesian War of 445, or the Peace of Nicias that ended the Archidamian War in 421. In both of these pieces, as we've seen, nothing had been done to affect the power of Athens and Sparta, and some states were unhappy with the peace terms. Given Athenian imperialistic ambitions, it was only a matter of time, both in 445 and 421, before hostilities broke out again. And the same is true in 346. Athenian imperialistic ambitions did not abate. Even though under the terms of the Peace of Philocrates, Amphipolis was lost to Athens, the Athenians still unrealistically harboured hopes of getting it back. And the Thebans were resentful of how Philip had championed the Athenians over them in the lead-up to the peace in 346. The Athenian attitude is shown when Philip was elected president of the Pythian Games at Delphi in 346, after he'd ended the Third Sacred War. The Athenians decided that they were not going to attend these games. As a result, Philip sent an embassy to Athens with an offer the Athenians could not refuse. This was an offer in mafia parlance of be there or else. And this situation prompted Demosthenes to deliver a speech to the Athenian assembly called On the Peace. In it, he argued that while the Peace of Philocrates was a bad one for the Athenians, they should adhere to its terms as they would give them the chance to regroup before further hostilities against Philip. So, says Demosthenes, it's necessary now to attend the games rather than face the wrath of the king and possibly even the Amphictyonic League. So you can see what I mean when I say the Peace of Philocrates was doomed to fail. It's clear that Demosthenes did not see the peace as anything but ephemeral, hence his reference to future hostilities. What's more, Demosthenes was intent on taking on Philip anyway, so there was always going to be trouble on the horizon. Demosthenes' anti-Macedonian stance is famous throughout history, but whether it's a genuine one is not that certain. His first political speeches in the assembly, which had to do with fiscal matters and foreign policy, were failures. But once he targeted Philip and spent all of his energy denouncing him as someone who wanted to bring about the end of Greek freedom, and in some speeches he even says Philip wanted to destroy Athens, then Demosthenes began to build a real following in the assembly. And by the 340s, Demosthenes was so influential that the people followed his denunciations and proposals, despite the reservations of Demosthenes' opponent, another orator called Aeschines. Now, all of this raises questions about Demosthenes, and we might talk about some of these here. For example, was Demosthenes right to see Philip in this way, as a man who wanted to conquer Greece from the outset and even destroy Athens? Was Demosthenes genuine in the stance he took against Philip, urging the Athenians, indeed the Greeks, to resist the king at all costs, whatever the outcome? Or was Demosthenes merely exploiting the threat from Philip as his political platform? In other words, he was no staunch patriot, but a cynical opportunist. I'll leave you to come up with your own views, ladies and gentlemen, but let me just throw out something that shows how I swing on this matter. Demosthenes' first political speeches were in 354 and 353. Now, by 353, the Athenians had been at war with Philip for 4 years, and he was already involved in central Greek affairs, in Thessaly, for example, and in 353, by the way, that's the year that he's defeated by Onomarchus. Why is there no mention of Philip in these early speeches of Demosthenes? The first time Demosthenes puts the spotlight on Philip is in his first Philippic of 351. Demosthenes says that he, that's Demosthenes, he and he alone, recognized the danger from Philip from the start of his reign. So if that's true, I'd expect mention of Philip well before 351. That's what, 8 years after the start of Philip's reign. Moreover, when Demosthenes says that Philip was intent on conquering Greece from the outset, as I've argued in the last lecture, that was not the case. Involvement in central Greece was something that came later, after the defeat in Thessaly, not from the outset of Philip's reign, when all he was concerned about then was securing his borders and basically staying alive as king. But let's return, let's go back to the aftermath of the Peace of Philocrates. In 345, a year later, Philip was busy with a short campaign against an Illyrian tribe. You see what I mean when I said in the last lecture that he always needed to keep an eye on the Illyrians. Just because he conquered them in 358 and absorbed them into his army does not mean that they remained loyal and steadfast to him throughout the reign. In fact, he always needed to keep an eye on the Illyrians, even as late as the last couple of years of his reign. In this battle, by the way, Philip broke his right collarbone. So he was always in the thick of fighting. He was the traditional Macedonian warrior king. We've already seen him lose his right eye. Now he's broken a collarbone. Eventually we'll see him wounded almost fatally in a leg. Now, Philip was also busy in 345 with transferring some of his people from one part of Macedonia to another. For he settled the people principally in colonies along his northwest frontier. In other words, along that Illyrian border. It's interesting, by the way, that our later source Justin, who's one of only two sources who gives us a narrative of Philip's reign, Justin describes the people who were transplanted from one part of Macedonia to another as upset. Now, we might expect they would be upset at this move because it was forced on them. But Justin goes on to say that, and I'd like to quote here, that there was, quote, silent, forlorn dejection as men feared that even their tears might be taken to signify opposition. I find the reference to this fear interesting because I can see in it perhaps an insight into how popular or perhaps unpopular Philip was as a king. Anyway, things start to hot up between Philip and Greece in 344. In that year, Philip was forced to intervene again in Thessaly. He seems finally to have got sick of the fighting between Larissa and Ferry. Can't say I blame him. And he decided to do something permanent about that problem once and for all. He installed a pro-Macedonian oligarchy and garrison in Ferry. And then he went further. He divided the whole of Thessaly equally into four parts, a tetrarchy. Each part was under the control of a governor or tetrarch that he appointed himself. Now, Demosthenes took Philip's actions in Thessaly to say that the Macedonian king had enslaved the whole of Thessaly and that the rest of Greece would be next if we don't watch out for it. But the Thessalians hadn't been enslaved, and Demosthenes' rhetoric was just that, rhetoric. It was to help him convince the assembly that Philip intended to end Greek freedom. 344 was also significant because Philip sent an embassy to Athens, an embassy that proposed changes to the Peace of Philocrates. Now, when the peace had been signed in 346, it was a bilateral one. It was sworn between Philip on behalf of his allies and Athens on behalf of its allies. Philip now, in 344, proposed changing the peace to a common peace one. In other words, a peace where each ally swore its own oath with other states. And he further proposed that any Greek state, not then a member of the peace, could join it. Now, Demosthenes reacted to Philip's proposal to change the peace by delivering his second Philippic speech in the assembly. In this speech, Demosthenes rightly argued that the new arrangement, this common peace arrangement, would weaken Athens' hegemony of its empire, because his allies would now be more closely linked to Philip than before. Instead of Athens swearing on behalf of its allies bilaterally, each ally would now swear separately and independently with Philip. So Demosthenes successfully proposed that as far as any new ally was concerned, the terms should be adjusted from the what each party possessed in the original Peace of Philocrates to what was each party's own. So in the terms of the Peace of Philocrates, the allies of each side were determined along this phrase, along this terminology of what each party possesses in 346. Now Demosthenes wants to change that to what was each party's own. That meant Amphipolis and various towns in Thrace would be returned to Athens. And this is absurd. Now, needless to say, Philip sent the Athenian embassy that reported the assembly's decision packing. And so Athens and Macedonia were again on a collision course. Can we blame Demosthenes for wrecking the peace? Most historians say so. And at first sight, we'd have to agree with them. The answer does seem to be yes, because there's no question that Demosthenes knew Philip would reject his counter-proposal. Philip doesn't want to give the Athenians an inch when he knows they'll take a mile and try to reconquer or get back allies that they'd lost before. What's more, the Athenians would have known this too. But look at Demosthenes' power in the assembly now. He's convinced the Athenians to support him in changing this clause, and everyone would have known what Philip's reaction was. But before you trash Demosthenes, as most people seem to do, let's not see Philip as someone who is as innocent as the driven snow. Because he was the one that proposed changes to the peace in the first place, not the Athenians. And these were very cunning changes that would be to his benefit. Because what they entailed, of course, was him attracting Athens' allies closer to him and so, therefore, further away from Athens. Now, the Peace of Philocrates was on life support in 344, but it died in 343. In that year, Philocrates, the architect of the peace, was put on trial for making proposals contrary to the common good. That was the official charge. In other words, proposing peace with Philip in the first place. Philocrates saw the writing on the wall and fled into exile before his trial. Significantly, Demosthenes, who had also played a key role in bringing about the peace in 346, did not support Philocrates in 343. So Demosthenes is now out to distance himself from the peace as far as possible. Philocrates, as I said, saw the writing on the wall, fled into exile, and was condemned in absentia. Demosthenes also now began to work towards building a coalition of Greek states to face Philip. Demosthenes knew that this was the only chance now that the Greeks had of defeating Philip. And included in this coalition would be Thebes. Thebes, a longtime enemy of Athens, but currently hating Philip more. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. That would be a great title for a Greek history book or course. Also in 343, Demosthenes brought a suit against his rival Aeschines for misconduct on one of those diplomatic embassies to Philip in 346 that led to the Peace of Philocrates. The charge was one of misconduct, allegedly for taking a bribe from Philip, but what was Demosthenes' real motive, though, was personal, because he hated Aeschines. When Demosthenes appeared before the king for the first time at Pella, he apparently lost his nerve. He stammered and he couldn't complete his speech. Aeschines ridiculed him for this, and Demosthenes never forgave him. Plus, Aeschines had also supported the peace in 346. And by prosecuting him so soon after Philocrates' trial, Demosthenes was further distancing himself from the peace. People would say, oh, Aeschines and Demosthenes supported the peace in 346, but now Demosthenes is prosecuting Aeschines, so Demosthenes mustn't believe in it. Now, Aeschines was an influential orator, though he was never on a par with Demosthenes. Aeschines was an anti-Macedonian, but he had a different policy towards Macedonia, and that was to keep the peace of Philocrates alive. Aeschines saw it as a way for Philip and Athens to remain allied together on an equal basis, and hence that would allow Athens to enjoy some power in Greece. But once the peace ended, Aeschines knew then that anything might happen. So his policy clashed with that of Demosthenes, who was out to end the peace and unite Greece against Philip to take him down. Now, at this trial for misconduct, Aeschines was acquitted, but only by a narrow margin, 30 votes, and the number of the jurors at his trial, 1,501, so it was close. Relations between Philip and Athens plummeted during the later 340s, because from 342 to 341, Philip invaded Thrace, defeated the Thracian kings, and added Thrace to the Macedonian Empire. Look how big Macedonia is by now. As well as the additional area, the extra revenues from the conquest of Thrace would be flowing into Macedonian coffers. And what's more, Philip now integrated Thracian troops in his army, especially the javelin throwers, who were somewhat of a speciality force among the Thracians. So this picks up, we're now in 341, this picks up on what I said in a previous lecture about the military reforms continuing throughout Philip's reign. Now, the Athenians had settlers in a number of Thracian coastal towns, and they were concerned about their safety. More importantly, the Thracian Chersonese region was critical to the corn route, as we know. Now, during Philip's campaign in Thrace, the Athenians sent a naval force into that region and even attacked Philip's ally Cardia on the Thracian Chersonese. Now, that led Philip to write a letter of protest to the Athenians. But Demosthenes was again able to turn public opinion against Philip when he gave two very important speeches in 341. These speeches were called On the Chersonese and the Third Philippic. In these speeches, Demosthenes widened the context of the struggle between Athens and Philip to the danger to Greece from Philip's expansion in Thrace, and then to Philip's intention to destroy Athens. Philip is portrayed as the enemy of democracy. Now, that would resonate with the Greeks. And Demosthenes says that those bribed by Philip, his agents in the various Greek states, those bribed by Philip were against democracy and that they should be beaten to death right now. For the Athenians, the Thracian Chersonese was always going to be their Armageddon. Byzantium effectively controlled passage through the Bosphorus through the Hellespont, through which the corn convoy travelled before entering the Aegean. That meant it was vital for the Athenians to be on friendly terms with Byzantium, even though Byzantium had seceded from Athens' empire at the end of the Social War. Now, when Thrace fell to Philip in 341, the Greek settlements in the Far East, to call them that, and these are Perinthus, Celimbria, and Byzantium, naturally wondered whether they'd be next. They were basically the last Greek outposts. Athenian worries over the Chersonese intensified in the spring of 340, when Philip left Pella, marched through Thrace, and besieged Perinthus. Perinthus received help from several states and also Persia, and that help, along with its defensive location, made the siege very difficult for Philip. After some time spent in trying to take the place, Philip suddenly cut his force in two. He left one half to continue the siege of Perinthus, and he led the other half to besiege Byzantium. It's at this stage, by the way, with the siege of Byzantium, that he uses the torsion catapult, developed by his engineering corps for the first time. Now, the Athenian force stationed along the Thracian Chersonese was obviously proving a hindrance to Philip. When it was suddenly called away, I think we can see Philip behind this. All of a sudden, the commander gets a letter summoning it to go elsewhere. This is too much of a coincidence. Because as soon as it's called away, Philip swoops in and seizes the Athenian corn convoy. He clearly decided by now that relations between him and Athens couldn't be improved diplomatically. And I'd argue, all right, now, this is like a semi-heresy, because somebody else has already said this, but I'm making more of a meal out of it than another historian. I'd argue that his move now in seizing that corn convoy was actually his declaration of war, because he called the ships spoils of war. Now, the Athenians didn't pick up on the implications of his action, because it was only when they heard what Philip had done, that Philip had seized the corn convoy, that Demosthenes then persuaded the Athenians to declare war on Philip. So I think he's already declared war on them. They didn't realize this. And when they declare war on him, well, you know, it's already happening. It's of interest for the history of Alexander the Great, by the way, that when Philip left for Byzantium in 340, he made Alexander, who was then aged 16, the regent of Macedonia. Now, this clearly shows that by this time, Alexander's elder brother Arrhidaeus, the son of Philina of Larissa, had been passed over, and Alexander was now heir. We don't know when this happened, or why, other than that the sources indicate that Arrhidaeus had some sort of mental illness, and that made him unfit to succeed Philip as king. Now, one source, actually Plutarch in his Life of Alexander, blames Olympias, Alexander's mother, Philip's fourth wife, for poisoning Arrhidaeus so that her son Alexander could leapfrog over him and be next in line to the throne. Now, there's no evidence for this, but Olympias, you know, is a pretty nasty lady, and I wouldn't put this past her for a second. Incidentally, while regent of Macedonia, Alexander had his first battle. The Medians, a tribe on the upper Strymon River, seemed to have revolted. Without a second's thought, Alexander led a force against them. He defeated them in battle, and to keep them passive, he transpopulated people from Macedonia to a military outpost that he founded in the region of the Medians. And it's not a city, that's too grand a term, it's just a military outpost. But guess what he called that city? He called it Alexandropolis. Alexander's city. Not bad for a 16-year-old. In the meantime, Philip was getting nowhere with the siege of Byzantium. Therefore, he decided to end it, and he returned abruptly to Pella. Now, as Philip marched back, so we're now in the spring or perhaps early summer of 339, he made a brief foray into Scythia. He defeated the Scythians in battle, and he killed their king Aetius. Philip now added Aetius's kingdom to Macedonia. And as he left Scythia, he took with him 20,000 thoroughbred horses, and 20,000 Scythian women and children to be used as slaves or sold for profit. As Philip and the Macedonians marched home, a fierce Thracian tribe called the Triballi blocked their passage, and they demanded payment to let them through. Now, the Triballi obviously hadn't been conquered, otherwise they wouldn't have tried to stop Philip and the army getting through. And Philip engaged them in battle. He was severely wounded in this battle, in fact, near fatally. We're told that the sarissa, a sarissa belonging to one of his own men, went through his upper leg or thigh, in the process killing his horse under him. He lost a lot of blood. His men rushed him off the battlefield, and that allowed the Triballi to steal all of the booty that the Macedonians were bringing home from Scythia. Now, it took Philip several months to recover from this leg wound, and he limped for the rest of his life. Back in Greece, events were moving fast. Another sacred war, number 4, had been declared in 339 by the Amphictyonic League, this time against Amphissa. Now, the people of Amphissa had wanted to bring charges against the Athenians, but at a council meeting, an Amphictyonic council meeting, Aeschines, who was at the meeting and representing Athens, very neatly turned the tables on the people of Amphissa. The reaction to this fourth sacred war was lackluster, perhaps because the Greeks as a whole realized that Philip would be brought in as leader of the Amphictyonic army before too long. That meant that he would use his power to settle the fourth sacred war, similar to the way he settled the third sacred one, and use that ending to settle affairs in Greece. Now, when Philip did indeed enter Greece to wage war on Amphissa, he suddenly detoured to pass through Thermopylae and so threaten Thebes and Athens. Demosthenes persuaded the assembly to let him go to Thebes to negotiate an alliance against Philip. And as a result of Demosthenes' diplomacy, Athens and Thebes allied together against Philip, and they were soon joined by several other Greek states. So this alliance that Philip had worked so hard to prevent, both before and after the Peace of Philocrates, was now a reality. Faced by this coalition of Greek forces, Philip staked everything on a pitched battle at Chaeronea in Boeotia. This is on the border of Phocis, not far from Thebes. This was August 338. Whoever won the battle that day would decide the fate of Greece. So as far as I'm concerned, this makes the battle one of the most important in Greek history. Not just ancient Greek history either. Everything now revolves around the battle. Philip now knows that he has to do battle against these Greeks in order to settle Greek affairs. Diplomacy is out of the window now. It's time for military action. Now, the plain of Chaeronea was a good place for the Greeks to fight. It was about 2 miles wide. It had a number of rivers flowing through it, and it had hills to its north and south. The east of the plain by the Cephisus River was marshy, which meant that the fighting had to take place away from it, because the cavalry couldn't be deployed on that part of the plain. Remember the Persian cavalry at Marathon. Now, Philip had about 30,000 infantry and 2,000 cavalry. And of these, 24,000 infantry were Macedonian. The Greeks had around 30,000 infantry and 3,800 cavalry, with Athens sending some 6,000 soldiers up to the age of 50 and hiring about 2,000 mercenaries. Philip drew up his long Macedonian line, supported by his Thessalian allies, to match that of the Greek forces. On the Greek right flank, by the Cephisus, was the Boeotian contingent, which included the Theban sacred band. On the left flank was the Athenian contingent. Facing the Boeotians, so on the Macedonian left flank, was Alexander, now aged 18, and he was commanding the companion cavalry that day, a signal honour. Facing the Athenians, so on the Macedonian right flank, was Philip himself. Now, the Greeks had set up a long line deliberately so that in matching it, Philip would be forced to decrease the depth of his phalanxes. That meant that when his phalanx actually hit the opposite line, it wouldn't be as deep, so it wouldn't have that speed and mass as in previous battles. So this was very clever on the Greeks' part. But unfortunately, they were up against Philip, and he's a master strategist. Philip lulled the Greeks into thinking he was retreating. And then, rather than keeping their line together, the Greeks impetuously broke line to rush after Philip, although the sacred band stood firm on the right flank. The Greeks therefore opened up a gap in their line as Philip intended. Seeing Philip on his flank starting to move back, the Greeks thought that he was intimidated in some way, and so they rushed after him. Huge gap opened up, sacred band of course stayed put. Now at that point, Alexander charged the Greek right flank, and then Philip halted his feigned retreat and attacked the Greeks elsewhere. The battle turned into a rout. The Athenians alone had 1,000 men killed and 2,000 taken prisoner. Boeotian losses were also great because Alexander had annihilated the sacred band, which fought to the last man. The Greeks who survived the battle, they included Demosthenes. Demosthenes is no coward. They fled. Philip was now master of Greece. The story goes that Philip walked the battlefield, and when he saw the sacred band lying dead together, he burst into tears out of admiration for their bravery. I can believe that. He gave orders for a lion to be erected to commemorate the bravery of the sacred band, and the restored Lion of Chaeronea still stands there today. It's a very sobering memorial. Now, defeating the Greeks might have been the easy part for Philip. Now he had to decide what to do with them and how to impose Macedonian rule over them. We'll see what he did and take his reign to his assassination in 336 in the next lecture. Thank you very much.